welcome to a very special episode of A Gamer Looks at 40. I'm Bill Tucker. Thank you so much for joining me on this 40th episode.
Now, 40 for people, 40. That's 40, apropos.
It is. It is apropos. It's people usually do these sort of things for like 50, but I figure A Gamer Looks at 40. 40th, why not get it done, you know, 10 episodes early. Today we are doing an AMA, an Ask Me Anything. We have questions that are submitted by friends of the show and listeners and family members who I begged, please send me questions because I can't look like a lame person with 10 questions. So it's going to be fun. And joining me on this escapade through randomness and nonsense is my brother, Bobby. You've heard him a bunch on the show. And Mr. Joe Coro, who you've heard numerous times on this show as well. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this little escapade through people's questions, quandaries, and quizzes and other such things.
Love it. Wouldn't have missed it, Bill.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. All right. So I say we just jump in. But I'll start off before getting to that. What are you guys playing right now as far as games? Bobby, I'll start with you, man.
Oh, nothing much at the moment. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm playing the emulator of Tetris and
nice.
And also Ken Griffey Jr.'s.
I knew the answer was coming. I knew it was be Ken Griffey Jr. I knew it.
I've been meaning to start a game because I have a couple on Steam, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
Okay, cool. What games do you have on Steam that are on the never-ending backlog?
Oh, it's always a follow-up question. Hold on a second.
It's as if I don't do this nearly every day at this point.
Hold on, let me load up my list. You can go on to Joe if you want.
Okay. Joey, are you playing anything these days?
Yeah, so I'm as far as new games, I'm playing The Show, MLB The Show, okay. 22. Obviously a big baseball fan, so I'm playing that on the Nintendo Switch. Very cool. Very cool
nice.
Game. And the other new game, I'm new, I use that word loosely because it's been out for 5 years, but I've been playing Fortnite for 5 years and I love it. It was my kids that got me into it. And
yeah.
I love it. I'm completely hooked, Bill. I'm completely
really?
Addicted. Oh my God. They got me in big. They got
right.
me. It's a GoldenEye clone, you know. That's mm-hmm. really, and that's what a lot of the shoot 'em up experiences, first person, I should say, are. And so when they talk about camping, and you know the shooting of it, the aiming, the espionage, the slicing pie, all of that stuff that comes natural to our generation. Except building. There's a building aspect
right.
to it that I'll get
right.
into that I can't master. or get down at all. But okay. as far as new games, those are the two that I'm obsessed with. As far yeah. as older games, like Bobby said, I'm big on emulation. I got an arcade 1-up that I hacked and
nice.
Yeah, it's
nice.
Great. I've got basically every console emulator with at least 300 ROMs per system you can think of. So
man.
It's awesome. Yeah,
that's all. You know, people sometimes say, you know, what was when was the golden age of gaming? Was it the 16-bit era? Was it the 8-bit era? What was the golden age? And my answer is always now. We are currently living in the golden age of games because I can play anything
that's
from
true.
Any era at any time.
That's true.
Easily
that's true.
With yeah. no problem, legally or illegally. We live in the best era. it is the best time to be a gamer. What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
Bobby, did you comb through your Steam list to
Yeah. Okay. The next game I want to play, I'm about to play, is called Death's Door. And it's
okay.
a game that came out last year around July. And you play as a little crow running around. And in this universe, crows are grim reapers. So you have to collect souls and
okay.
work for the company. It's a charming, very
oh.
clever game.
That is cool.
It's cute. Yeah, sounds cool. All right, awesome. So let's start off with, I think, maybe the easy question first, because I think it might lead into a conversation of how this show kind of came about. I don't think it's a question anyone cares about, but I feel like being self-indulgent. Damn it. It's my 40th show, whatever. At Sommerfeldt_R, also known as Indie Rabbitry on Twitter, asked, what does the name of your podcast mean? Are you 40 or close to it?
Good question.
Yes, I am 40. I'm an old man. I'm actually 41 as of this recording. I almost did yes, I'm 40. How can I help you? Bobby might know that reference. Might.
It's on the tip of my brain. But
I know. It's a Rocco's Modern Life reference. Why, yes, I'm an intellectual. How may I help you?
Yeah.
So, yes, I am 40, of course. The name of the podcast. It's funny. I think back on naming the show. I feel like I should have named it something differently that was easier to like comprehend at the get-go. But the name is based off of a Jimmy Buffett song. And the Jimmy Buffett song is A Pirate Looks at 40. And I was thinking up ideas for a show, thinking, man, I got to get back into the podcasting thing. I was guesting on Games My Mom Found a lot. And like, man, I really miss this. So I'm thinking, what could I do? What's the topic, right? And you know me, I have to do something that's try to be as different as possible.
With a theme. Yeah.
Exactly, with a theme. And I'm in the shower, where all great ideas are born.
Yep.
And I'm thinking like, and I had the song A Pirate Looks at 40 in my head. And I really like that song because it's a little nostalgic. It's very wistful. It's without being sappy, this is a pirate looking back on 40 years of kind of living and making mistakes and that sort of thing. And then I thought, ooh, A Gamer Looks at 40. And then right after that, it's my story of how video games have affected my life and everybody else's. Boom, that was it. I was like, okay, there it is. There's the show. Joey,
Eureka,
as they say. Joey was with me on my second podcast, which was Dev's Cast. Yes. Back in 2010. Was it 2010 to 2012? Did it run?
It was 2010. This is our this is our fourth go around.
Technically,
if you count Mojo Mobile, that's one. The Skank and Hepcat Show, that's two.
Yeah.
Dev's Cast being three. And now A Gamer is numero cuatro. But yes, we were together for Dev's Cast, which ran from 2010 to when was the lockout? That's what kind of crippled us.
It was 2012.
It was a 2-year run. And that was those were great times. I had a great time. You were living in Manhattan. At the time, and we were doing phone shows, we were doing live shows, one-on-one, we were doing shows at the arena. We would actually go to the game and do shows during the game, during the draft day party. Those were great. That was by far, far and away, the best podcast, my favorite personal podcast, Head and Shoulders, that I've been.
Yeah. And just for context, for those who may not have heard it or got it, Dev's Cast was a podcast in support of the New Jersey Devils hockey team. And we were doing that kind of podcast when there weren't many. There was a couple that were out at the time, but we were doing a very different show. And I think if we had kept it up, I think it would have definitely been a good companion piece to like the Devils Insiders that are, of course, that's the big one everyone listens to now. And because we weren't more stat-based, we were more people-focused. It's always been my interest is people and personal experiences, not so much like your Corsi GF percentage stat. That doesn't interest me. So we did Dev's Cast. And before that, Joey, you mentioned, and Bobby's aware of this one too, I think. Oh, you were. Of course, you were aware of it. The Skank and Hepcat Show.
Yes.
Which was my college radio show.
Loved it.
I played mostly ska music of the era in New Jersey, New York, New Jersey area. And we slowly but surely morphed into a talk show. We just started talking more and more and more. And then that show became a podcast in 2000. I was trying to think of the date. It had to have been around 2005 because I was traveling for work at the time. And I used to bring my microphone and my podcasting gear with me on the road. Bobby, did you listen to the old Skank and Hepcat Show? Because again, you're 5 years younger. You might not have been yet.
Yeah.
You did.
And I was able to figure out how to use, I think it was the Real Player or Real One Player.
Yes.
That's right.
It was on Winamp.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So,
on the Skank, because the Skank and Epcat show on the college radio station, we had a very, very small signal that barely covered the campus, because that you can get for free. Like, anybody can set up a radio station, you know, for you and your neighbors. It's not a big deal. But we had that in place, but we also broadcast it online. And this is back in like 99. Where nobody's listening to stuff online. So yes, we broadcast in Real Player.
Yep.
And then we broadcast CD quality, 128 kilobytes per second via Winamp, via Shoutcast was the service that we broadcast to.
Unreal.
So yeah, we used to do Winamp and Shoutcast. Okay, I wasn't sure if you had. Mm-hmm. But then it was like 2005, and I heard about this thing called a podcast, and there was nothing on the service. It was just an Apple thing at the time. And I'm like, oh, I could do my college radio show and just like just get shows up and like do them whenever I want. That's awesome. So I basically did the Skank and Hepcat show, which of course Joey was a big part of the college show. And then Skank and Hepcat show I kind of just did solo. But I had to have been one of the first 5,000 podcasts on iTunes. Seriously, because there was no Joe Rogan and Adam Carolla. That was basically the two big and Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais was the third one who had
your platform.
That was the big podcast of the day, and nobody even heard of them before. I was promoting on MySpace. I was legit like promoting on MySpace and going. Yeah, it was pretty wild, and that show kind of ended after a couple of years. So, yeah, that was the road. So, Skank and Hepcat show to Devscast in 2011. We were really lucky in Devscast to be there the last time the Devils were good and relevant, because ever since we stopped playing, man, they have not been good or relevant.
Playing as well.
Yeah, it's true.
We were there for their finals run. You know, which
2012.
Was,
yep.
It was really, really cool. So, thank you, Sommerfeldt, for that question that led us down a bit of a rabbit hole. No pun intended for your name in the rabbit tree. I'm going to continue with the Twitter questions. This one comes from the Well-Read Mage. Moses, you know him from this show. He's been on the show a bunch. Very simple question for you guys. Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy VI?
Ooh, simple question.
Really? Simple, huh?
I don't know. I don't think it's simple. That's tough
it's
for
impossible.
Me.
It's a very hard question. it's a very challenging question.
I'm a big fan of the Chrono Trigger franchise, more so than Final Fantasy. So,
okay.
But having said that, it's still a great game out of all the Final Fantasy installments. I'm going to have to go with Chrono Trigger on this one.
Okay.
And
Yeah,
not by a lot. That's a tough question and a good question too.
It's a really challenging one. Yeah.
I'm going to go with CT.
I'm going to split that and say I'm going to go with Final Fantasy VI. That's no shading as Chrono Trigger. It's a fantastic game, but I just like Final Fantasy VI better. I think it's a little more of a full experience for me than Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger is a very trim, slim game. Like there's no fat on Chrono Trigger's bones. But I love Final Fantasy VI because I think the systems are deeper, like the RPG elements are just deeper. Mm-hmm. I love the end of it. I think I just think it has a very full experience. Not to say Chrono Trigger isn't. Chrono Trigger is fantastic. But if I had to pick one or the other to play for the rest of my life, I would do Final Fantasy VI. Yeah, for sure. A little more traditional than the Chrono Trigger. What about you, Bobby?
I think my gut reaction is Final Fantasy VI. Wow. Just because to this day, I still like, there's like scenes and images that are burned into my memory. And I think that's why it sticks with me. But Chrono Trigger, I enjoyed playing more for whatever reason, probably because I'm not a big RPG guy, but Chrono Trigger, I was able to actually complete and then do the plus mode, which was really fun. And, I think as a full, I would just love to see like one of the rare occasions I see like a movie adaptation from a video game would be like Final Fantasy VI would just pull it off perfectly.
Yeah,
copy it and don't change anything.
It'd be a pretty massive cast though, I think, right?
Oh,
I
mean, sure.
Yeah, but you know, never know. Absolutely. Or honestly, a series, like a TV series.
Yeah.
I think it'd be better suited for that because of the scope of the game. But yeah, no, for sure. Those are good. So Final Fantasy VI wins, Moses. Sorry, man. He is a a huge proponent of Chrono Trigger as one of the greatest games, if not the greatest game ever made. And when people sometimes ask, "Oh, what do you think? What's your favorite Final Fantasy?" His answer is always Chrono Trigger. But thank you for the question. I mean, it's just hard because Chrono Trigger is so fantastic, man. Yes. It's a very hard one. But I think for me, Final Fantasy VI, for purely subjective personal reasons, I think I have to go with that because it is pretty formative in my gaming experience. Nightfall247 asks, what is your holy grail game that you want for your collection?
Holy grail. Okay. So holy grail by game. That, like, yeah. Does that mean game that I don't have that I want?
Yes. I believe that is what, that's the intention.
Okay.
It, yes.
Next question. Are they talking tangible? Because now, you know, based on our, you know, previous conversation, with emulation, you can get any game you want. So they're talking like a tangible cartridge?
Yes, exactly. Yes, correct.
It's Earthbound. That's an easy question. Yeah.
Earthbound, wow, okay.
94, I want to say.
That sounds about right, yeah.
No, that's that to me, that's – I'm for whatever reason, I have a very, very difficult time, and I've had a very difficult time finding that game. That was – you know, Bob talked about a, you know, game where the images and – you know, stuff were burned into his head. That's Earthbound for me. That's and it's funny too, because Final Fantasy VI that came out the same year. I don't want to veer off topic here, but really 94, when you look, that's really when they start pulling away from Genesis, because you had Final Fantasy VI came out that year. Earthbound came out that year. Donkey Kong Country, Super Metroid. That was a great year. That was a great year as far as games for the SNES. There's at least 10 ones that are, I mean, Hall of Fame. But to me, if I'm going top three for that year, and that's my holy grail to get back to the root question, Earthbound.
That's awesome. Now, Bobby, I know you don't really collect, and I don't really either. I have no room for anything. My home is filled with too many things as it is. I can't collect anything. I can barely collect clothes. Do you have like a holy grail kind of, if you did have a collection, like what's one game you would love to have in a physical, like, man, it'd be cool to have this.
Well, it's funny, cause I do have the original like Silent Hill games 1 through 3. Mm-hmm. I already have them. And apparently I got to lock those in a box cause they did a re-release like a few years ago and it was a disaster. So apparently my versions are like the sought out after ones. I got to hold on to those apparently, but, I don't know. I did go through a phase for a minute, like catching up on games that I missed out on, and I kind of got them all, I think. Like Shadow of the Colossus, remember that? And the original God of War series, like stuff like that. But like an NES game, I don't know if it's like tangible or not, but I would love to get, because I used to play it as a kid, and I'd like to like play it now as an adult. It's a boy and his blob.
Ooh.
Great game. Great game.
It's fun.
I feel like I even like it more now as an adult.
Yeah.
And I like Joey said, I could probably emulate it, but I'd love a cartridge of it. That'd be fun.
Yeah. That's a good pick. I like Boy and His Blob is a really, really fun game that people forget exists. You know, that's a good one. For me, I don't know if I have a game. Again, because again, I don't collect. I don't have a collecting gene in me. But I would really like to have a collection of Zelda-themed portable systems. So, like, because usually whenever a portable system is released, like the Switch, there'll be a Zelda edition. And I have a Zelda 3DS XL and a Zelda traditional DS. I would like to collect just all the handhelds that are Zelda-themed. Because I like Zelda quite a bit as a game, but I really love the art, and I love, you know, this... the Triforce and all the art around it and the symbols, and they're always in like cool gold. I like the design of it. So if I could get like a full set of consoles, portable consoles that have that design on it. I think the Wii U had like a Zelda variant at some point. Like I think they all did at some point.
That still hurts, Bill.
Why? Why is that?
I love that system. I was so sad that system
failed. I know.
Failed.
You are a strong proponent of both the Wii and the Wii U, for sure.
And the Dreamcast. Joey loves an underdog. The Dreamcast is good, though. It was.
We were together. Dude, yeah. I don't know if the three of you remember that.
You had it with you.
Telling about Dreamcast. So we got to play it. Phil's like, we will. I said, we'll play it. He's like, well, what do you just have it in your pocket? And I pulled it out of my pocket. And
I remember that.
He cracked up. He almost crashed.
Didn't we go to like McDonald's or something and play Crazy Taxi on the Dreamcast?
What a memory. Yes. Yeah.
We went to the McDonald's off the Parkway in New Jersey, exit 145. And they had TVs, you know, littered throughout this McDonald's. And Bobby knows exactly the one I'm talking about. It's the one where you used to get the McPizza constantly. And we would go there and he would plug in the Dreamcast.
That was Crazy Taxi. One of we went from a great restaurant where we had pizza, and then we went from there to Opal's, and then to we pit stopped at McDonald's. To try to hook up the Dreamcast to the television, and then we saw a movie. And here's a trivia question. This probably won't make the show. What movie did we see, the three of us?
What year was this? Oh, I'm trying to think. What year do you think? Oh, I don't know.
I have a guess. Was it Robin Hood?
Oh, my God! Bobby, whoa, for the win! Great job!
The Russell
Crowe
Robin Hood.
Yeah. Wow.
I remember that.
Great job. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I remember the...
It was Russell Crowe's awful Robin Hood.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone noticed, but I did fall asleep during that movie. I've only fallen asleep like twice in a theater, and that was one of them.
That was one of them? Oh, my gosh.
I woke
so
up, and there was a war at the end. I was like, oh, I missed a lot.
Oh, no. That's funny. Cool, man. Oh, hey, very good.
Yeah, little sidebar, and it just came to me. Was there ever like a developer cart or like a rare cart that you can pick up of Star Fox 2? Because I remember that was like the Nintendo Power used to tease it, yeah, and it never came out. But apparently, according to legend, there was like, you know, you could play it somehow.
Yes, there were. So there's two to answer your question. It's Australia had one that was unlimited release. And those, you talk about a holy grail, those are a fortune on eBay. And then the second way you could play it without hacking an emulator is when they released the SNES Mini. I want to say, oh man, probably 3 or 4 years ago, they had packed it onto the game, which was an emulator, which was a ROM, but it was a Nintendo released. It was Nintendo authorized.
Cool.
Very cool. So it was polished, new sound, real time dialogue.
Wow,
fantastic! No, it was awesome. That's a really good question, actually, Bob.
Yeah, and actually, you can also play it on the Switch Online now too. It's available on Switch Online for the SNES.
Yes.
I actually tried it last week. I had some rare time, and like, you know what? I've never people kind of complain about Star Fox 2. It's a neat game. It's an interesting game. What they tried to do with it, it's very ambitious in what they were. They really got away from just shooting in a straight line. It's a lot of it's almost like an RTS, like real time strategy, where you have to kind of like, oh, a missile is coming to Corneria. So do I send my people over there to take out the missile, or do I take out this base? It's very interesting. I don't know how fun it is. I played it for maybe 45 minutes, and I was like, oh, this is actually fine. But yeah, evidently, that is, for the longest time, that was the hardest. That was one of those white whales in the yep, catalog for sure. All right, next up is a person we all know very well, CypherX0, also known as Mr. Pete Harney. We all know Mr. Pete. He is a stalwart of the show. He hasn't been on the show, but he attends nearly every Twitch stream that I do. Even if he's not listening because he's at work, he puts it on and then sticks it in his pocket. That way, at least I have one person on there when I'm trying cursing at Bioshock Infinite or at Hollow Knight, which is what I'm doing right now. He asked two questions. If you could vacation in any location of any game you've played, what would it be and why?
Corneria. Fourth planet of the Lilacs.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
So let's say the question again. If I could vacation on any fictional land in a video game that I've played, is that the question?
Yeah. Yes, if you could go to vacation in any land or any location in a game you've played, where would that be? In
I guess for I guess Hyrule would be
okay.
Yeah, no, I'm very big into that time period. Anyway, and yeah, that's a very mystical, magical place. Hyrule, yeah. Pete.
Okay. What about you, Bobby? Do you have a thought on that?
I think I'd party on Donkey Kong Island and Donkey Kong 64.
That's pretty good.
I'd party with some monkeys.
I get down with that.
They look like fun. Lots of bananas. I don't even like bananas. But
that's pretty good. Yeah.
Maybe to keep me on my toes. Nah, I was just for the gag, Silent Hill.
I was thinking Silent Hill too.
Just to see what I come back with, what memories I come back with. Oh yeah.
Oh, hi, repressed memory. Repressed number 82.
Trauma. I vacation with my repressed trauma.
Yes, exactly. I came to Silent Hill, and all I got were my lousy insecurities. Hi.
Remember that cat that chased me when I was a kid? Oh, it's bigger at Silent Hill. It's watching bigger, through the window.
It's bigger and has 18 legs. Yes. Hi. Well, that's the thing with this question, though, is because I've asked a similar question on my show, my three question segment, and the issue is always video game locations are never great because they're always a problem. And there's always a strife. There's always a struggle. Sure. So it's kind of like balancing out how often that struggle happens. Hyrule's not a bad option, right? Because usually it's pretty good for most of the time, and then you know, once in a couple hundred or thousand years, you may run into some issues with Ganon, but 99% of the time, you're actually in good shape. I always say Besaid for this question from Final Fantasy X. Again, I don't love the beach, but boy, there's lots of other things to do. I'm a big Blitzball fan. I love Blitzball. Call me crazy. I really enjoy that Blitzball game. I played a lot of damn Blitzball in Final Fantasy X. And I don't know. I think that'd be cool. Hang out.
Very cool.
Walk is a good egg. Yeah, seems like a straight shooter. So that's usually my pick for that one. The second question from Pete is, what would make up your Mount Rushmore of consoles? Ugh. Mount Rushmore, of course, being your top four consoles. Yeah. If you had the ability to take that beautiful, majestic landmark and obliterate it, knock it to the ground, and replace it with four video game consoles, what would you put in our Founding Fathers' stead?
Oh, God. Mine are going to be so obscure. You want to go first? Bob?
No. I'm trying to think, put it in my head right now.
All right. Well, I mean, I can do three right off the bat.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Sega. These are going to be very obscure. Let me just, because I don't want to be mocked for this. Is this me, my personal opinion of Mount Rushmore video game systems, or is this like, you know, like do what I feel are the best or considered the best systems, the best selling, the most favorite?
I would say the way I read this question and the way I always think of it is the four that you would want immortalized. Is that even a word?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Immortalized into rock, mm-hmm. Right here. Like, think about this. The Mount Rushmore right now has four presidents on it. They may not be the best presidents, but they're the four most, at the time, influential, okay, or meaningful or historically significant. So that's how I always read that, as historically significant.
All right. Well, for me, then, it would have to be the Wii U. I love that system. I know it didn't sell.
Sorry.
I hear you laughing.
Sorry.
I know it didn't sell.
And then the Virtual Boy, and then the, no,
then the Sega Nomad. Yeah. Right?
No, the Wii U to me was the best of both worlds, because it was fully backward compatible with the Wii, which, again, say what you want, it sold over 100 million consoles. So my whole library for the Wii was playable on there, and the games were tremendous. A lot of great games. A lot of great games for the Wii U that were ported and remade for the Switch, starting with Mario Maker. You go back, and again, I'm not going to get on a soapbox here, but I'm so upset that console failed. And then the second one for me is the Sega Master System. Again, that's personal. That was my first video game system. Bill knows that. I was 6 years old. I love that system. After that, we'll go Dreamcast. Another one that just for me was like, wow, just groundbreaking. And then number four is going to be Nintendo 64, because as wonderful as the advancements of Super Nintendo were from the Nintendo, that jump from 8-bit to 16-bit, the next iteration, the next Nintendo console, the N64, I mean, my God, it was it was breathtaking to see 64 bits and how they did it and 3D rendered graphics. So that's my four.
Gotcha. And that's I'm in the midst of right now the Nintendo 64 series of episodes, and a lot of people kind of sit there and dunking on N64. Mm. You know, there's a bit of dunkage going on, but I have one person on the show who adores the N64 like you do, Joey, and he says the same thing. He's like, there's never been a generational leap like the Super Nintendo to the N64. He's like, there's never been, and agreed, never has been. And there's just the jump from that from 16 to 64 for that those two consoles. There's never been anything like it.
And whether you were porting, Donkey Kong or Mario, everyone obviously remembers the Mario game, Star Fox, whatever you were playing on the previous generation, hockey. I mean, go from NHL 94 to Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey. It was just an incredible jump. It was a graphical, incredible jump. Like, oh my God, like, wow, this is the way it's supposed to be. It's like when Dorothy went in from Kansas to Oz and everything's in color. It was like that type of reaction. Wow, look at this.
Yeah, man. All right, Bobby. What about your Mount Rushmore of consoles?
Yeah. I think just sticking to like what is historically significant. I think the Atari should go up there. I've never personally played an Atari, so if I'm president of this world, I guess it would be an Intellivision, which is like because that's when I actually played from her uncle, and I think Joey has it now, right?
I have your uncle's,
yeah.
It was the best gift I could have got.
Is he still have the Dracula game?
I got more than that. I went on, I don't want to veer off topic here, but I went on a binge.
Nice.
And I got about 20 games for the Intellivision now. It sits with the rest of my collection. Your uncle's always got a very dear place in my heart for that one.
I got, so it's the Atari and or Intellivision. The Game Boy, the leaps and bounds of portable gaming. I don't know what portable game system came first, but Game Boy was the one I had, and I think a lot of people did. And it was the first practical one where the battery life was pretty good, and you know, it was legitimately portable. I know Sega Game Gear had a color, but the battery life was pretty bad.
2 hours.
Yeah, it was bad. I remember being on a bus with a friend and like this game just dying out on him, for a field trip. And then I agree with Joey. I second the N64. A generational jump, but also set the stage for every system after it. Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't go back and not do anything in a 360 space. Mm-hmm. And the control on N64 Nintendo just nailed it, because We underestimate the analog control stick.
Yes.
That thing was a game changer, and you cannot make a controller now without it.
Right.
It doesn't exist.
Right.
And just pushing Mario in the direction of the control, like nothing ever felt that way, and it really just can never go back again. And then I think just the original Wii. I think that system, I know you love the Wii U, but the Wii was just this game changer of motion control, and you can play Nintendo with your grandma. And I think that was just
great.
Humongous. I never thought I'd play anything with my aunt. it was a family game system and of the truest kind. So I think those are all monumental systems.
I think that's an excellent list. And I actually think I might just take that and say that's it. Because my first thought was the Atari 2600. Mm-hmm. As far as – I don't want – my instinct is always like, well, the original NES. But this is going to be a very controversial hot take. Even though the NES was the platform that resurrected the video game industry, video games were going to be a thing. It was just a matter of who was going to do it first. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo just happened to do it first. And that's you know, all credit to Nintendo for putting together a system that was able to do that. But a lot of people will say, well, if Nintendo never existed, you wouldn't have video games. Not true. Someone else would have done it, because
Presumably interactive Sega. Medium.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, right? An interactive media may not be the same, but it would have happened. Like, that was just going to be a thing. But I think that 2600, I was going to say Super Nintendo, because that is really the crown jewel, I think, of the 16-bit era. As much as people love the Genesis, and I think the Genesis, I've softened on the Genesis quite a bit, especially after my episodes. So I would say probably Atari 2600, Super Nintendo. Damn, Game Boy Smart, though. That is such a good pick. And I can't have everything to be Nintendo, which is why where I'm like, I can't have it all be Nintendo because there are other players.
Well, you had Atari. You did put Atari in there.
Yeah, I had Atari in there. So I think I'm going to say Atari 2600. I'm going to stick with my Super Nintendo, although, damn it, Game Boy is a better pick because their Game Boy changed games. Well, handheld games were forever changed and irrevocably changed as a historic, milestone, probably more than a Super Nintendo. Don't forget, I'm stealing yours, Bobby. I'm stealing it. Atari 2600. I'm going to say the Game Boy. I'm going to say the PS2. And the reason I PS2 is because the PS2 was, I think, the era when gaming started becoming more mainstream. We had figured out all the issues of the PS1, the cinematics, right? We've kind of gotten the awkward teenager years of the early PS1 era. They had grown up now. He was all grown up. And introduced DVDs. Mm-hmm. Most people's first DVD player was the PS2.
That's true.
The library is, of course, fantastic. I mean, just the library for the PS2 is unbelievable. And I think you can't have everything be Nintendo. It's not take away from N64. And then finally, I think I would have to say the Wii. I agree with that. I think the Wii is absolutely, I think, the final one on the list because for every reason you guys said. It took gamers from a very small subset of people to literally anybody. And I think that's important. I think that inclusion is important, that it's not this niche thing. It doesn't have to be, right? And the Wii became like a cultural icon. It became like a status symbol.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching Tropic Thunder and Matthew McConaughey's playing a Wii.
Yep. Like it was pop culture. Yep.
It became a pop culture symbol. Yeah. So yeah, I think it had a lot of waves.
Let's not forget that like Nintendo made it look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And then Xbox tried to make their motions device, and then PS3 had the Move. Yeah. And
both failed spectacularly.
Yeah. And so Nintendo really nailed it in developing that system. I wonder if we have too much Nintendo on this Mount Rushmore, if I had to take one off. Or if I get a fifth rock, I'll take one. I'm president of this wacky land. I'll waste the taxpayer money. I think there should be room for the Commodore for what it started with, PC gaming.
Sure.
That is a piece of my heart as well.
Know what? That's a great point. I tailored my Mount Rushmore now when I heard you guys do yours to more myself. I didn't know if the question is, it was more posed to what was groundbreaking. You guys' lists are it's basically the same as mine.
Do you know who are amongst the coolest people in the world? I mean, really. The Hepis Cats. Of all the cats that could possibly exist, my loyal patrons, Pete Harney, Dan from Retro Logic, and Ryan from the Gamers Week podcast, all three of these wonderful human beings support me on Patreon. And you can too by visiting patreon.com/agamerlooksat440. $2 gets you early access to episodes, access to polls, and a couple other things I put on there because that's what you do when you make Patreon stuff. Once again, that's patreon.com/agamerlooksat440. Awesome. All right. So next up, at Games with Coffee on Twitter, good old Games with Coffee. He's a really good dude. He was the star, I guess you could say, or the subject of one of my early episodes, A Life Changed by Sonic. The man's a huge Sonic fan, and Sonic's been very influential throughout his life, and an all-around good fella, Games with Coffee. He asks, let's say a gaming franchise you love, like Zelda, for instance, allowed another well-known developer to make a game for that IP. What franchise would it be, and who would develop it? I have a canned answer for this, so if you guys want to think, I'll spit out my canned answer, because I have asked similar-ish questions, and it's a pretty easy one. For me, it would be Deus Ex. And the next IP, I want the team, Arkane Studios, the studio that did Dishonored 1 and 2, Prey, Deathloop. I want them to develop it, because I think that that studio would do an amazing job with an immersive sim. They would actually give real player expression. They'd understand what makes Deus Ex so incredible and fun, and I think they would do a bang-up job with it. So that's my pick, Deus Ex, done by Arkane Studios. What do you guys got?
Well, just to go over the question again, so I like the franchise, but I wish another studio developed it. Is that?
No, it's let's say, for example, like Nintendo. Right? Nintendo owns Zelda. And then they say, hey, you know what? We're going to let XYZ Studio make a game. What game would you like?
Based on the series. I got you.
Yeah, like what? Yeah, exactly. What franchise? What franchise's game would it be, and who would you want to develop it? Like, for example, when they handed Metroid off to Retro Studios and do Metroid Prime.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So what – that kind of idea.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with a modern take. Fortnite, like I said, I'm very into it right now. I would love to see Rockstar get their hands on Fortnite and see where they could where they could take that game. Because I think there's a lot of elements in Fortnite, just navigating the field, getting into cars, a lot of stuff that I think Rockstar could just do better.
Hmm. All right. Very nice. Very nice. That's a very interesting. And yeah, that's interesting. I can definitely see that, especially if you're going to expand it, open world it. Mm-hmm. The building mechanics may be really interesting in that kind of sandbox. Yeah, man. I could see it. I see it. Get on it, Rockstar. Let's go. Bobby, what do you got, man?
I see Donkey Kong done by Rockstar. No, I'm kidding. I'm just thinking of all these like lovely games done by the Grand Theft Auto people. I'd like to see anyone take the leads on Silent Hill.
Please.
Well, because Silent Hills 1 through 3 were this original series, original developers through Konami, and then I think the original Japanese development team did it, and then they let it go, and an American team took over, and it just got progressively worse. And there was an attempt a couple years back for a new Silent Hill reboot, so to speak, and it was going to involve Kojima and the film director, Guillermo del Toro.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was this like dream team project that just died on its feet.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, a really amazing playable trailer came out, and then that's hard to get a hold of because you can't buy it off the Sony store anymore.
Yeah. Is that the PT one?
Yes,
PT?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. I've seen gameplay footage of it. I'd love to play it, though. And if you have a console with that game on it, like that's worth money. So back to that last question of collectible cartridges or whatever. I need a whole system now just to play a playable trailer.
I know.
But so I think Silent Hill, just anyone who'd want to pick up the slack from that would be great and get the series back on track. There's just so much potential. And there's been good concepts for some of the new games, but they just haven't been executed very well.
That's true.
And, you don't like Silent Hill Shattered Memories or whatever it was?
Was that the one with the flashlight?
Yes.
That's for Wii, right? Yes, again, a good concept. But
not bad. Yeah.
Right, you use the Wii as remote as your flashlight, and you're literally
correct.
But you run from the things. But just they didn't know how to make that into a fleshed out game. I think I would just love to see anyone take the leads with that. It's been done before recently with Doom, because Bethesda took the leads and nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
The last two Doom games are really great.
So fun.
So I think there's plenty of opportunity there, and I think Rockstar needs a because they nail, they did so good with the last Red Dead, and they just need a new hit now.
That's right.
Well, right. Rockstar doesn't need to do anything because they're going to continue selling GTA 5 online.
That's what I mean.
From now until the rapture.
Sure. They, I know.
They really don't. They just keep milking that final. That's final. They keep milking GTA 5 continually.
Yeah.
They don't stop. So, yeah, I agree with that. Though I'd like to see a new Bully game.
Bully.
Man, I would love to see a new Bully game. Oh, that'd be so much fun.
Yeah, that takes me back.
Big time.
Yeah, man. All right, very good. So next up is the Wizard of Zardoz. Wizard of Zardoz asks, what video game were you sure was going to be terrible, but turned out to become one of your all-time favorites once you played it? His example is Metroid Prime, usually my go-to example for myself, because I was convinced Metroid would never work in an FPS console game. Wow. So...
Boy, were you wrong.
What games did you think were? Yeah. We were all wrong. Like, who thought that was ever going to work?
Yeah.
If you want to hear a really interesting podcast episode, the Well-Read Mage on MageCast interviewed one of the developers who worked on Metroid Prime at Retro Studios at the time.
And it's
pretty interesting, kind of like the hoops they had to go through to make things actually work. Just make things actually work. So neat podcast if you want to check that out. But yeah, so. What did you think was going to be awful and turned out to be amazing?
For me, I'll go first, Bob. I don't mean to jump you. Sticking with the Metroid franchise, Other M. And I mean, the reviews on Metroid Other M were, some of them were putrid. And I just remember thinking, how can this, it's still Metroid, right? It's still Metroid. It's part of the Metroid series. It's all of the characteristics and dynamics of the series that I love. So how can it be bad? So I went in with very, very low expectations. And yeah, it remains one of my favorites. I love it. It's for the Wii. And then again, re-released on the Wii. I'm laughing because I keep plugging the Wii U. But it was re-released on the Wii U. They didn't soup up the graphics or anything like that. That did look sharper though. I don't know why, but somehow it looks sharper on the Wii U. But I love it. The game, it opens after the events of Super Metroid. So the baby Metroid, like you, spoiler alert, you're Samus and you're inside the baby Metroid, as it's getting pummeled, by Mother Brain. So yeah, that's mine.
That's a very interesting. I think because that game does not get a lot of love.
No, not at all
in the world. That has actually become like a bad word in the Metroid series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a game I've never played. Probably, and I've been trying to as of late accept the opinions of others, but not allow them completely influence my choices on what to play. Like if something just looks neat, I'll give it a go, even if it's less than stellar. So that's very interesting. You're giving some love to. It's other end there. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. Good. Mr. Bobby, what about you, man?
Pokemon Snap. No, I'm kidding. I never played it.
People love Pokemon Snap.
There's a lot of defenders of that one.
People adore that game.
And the other one was, what was the one Zelda game that was like, I don't think it was bad, but it was like...
Skyward?
Different? No.
Skyward Sword.
It was different. It might have been like Ocarina of Time, maybe, or
no. You're thinking of Wind Waker. I think.
Wind Waker, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, graphically, yeah, it was different. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think people like that one too, or it has its fans.
Oh, people! It's now beloved. It's a beloved.
It's true. Entry. You're right.
Entry. Yeah.
But this is a more recent game, and I still play the arcade mode today when I just want something to like zone out to. It was an indie game from a couple years back called We Happy Few. And it's a small indie Canadian team made it, and it's a game that takes place in the 60s, basically if Germany won World War II.
Wow, that's cool.
And England is now under like a government mandated pill system to keep everyone happy.
Wow, it's a really cool concept.
It's a wonderful story, and it's a really good idea. And it had a lot of promise, the trailers, a lot of hype at the E3 and all that stuff. And then when it came out, it really didn't do very well. I don't think it sold particularly well, and the reviews are middling to mostly bad. And I think maybe the production team was got a little too big for its britches. I think like they got too ambitious for how big the sandbox can be. It had procedurally generated, like, you know, locations and stuff. That was a new concept at the time. I've played it. I've put many hours into it at this point.
Wow.
And I still occasionally replay it. I think it's really good. It isn't perfect. There is like elements that are broken. There's some of the procedural generated stuff, like, I don't know, like, you know, people like not sit on benches properly and things like that. You know, it's a little clunky, and I think that's what annoys people. And some of the gameplay might be not as engaging, but I think as in terms of like ambition and just like a piece of like art almost, like, it's really good. So I gave it a shot, and I end up playing the heck out of it. So that's one I always
defend. That's great.
Yeah,
that's good, man. Yeah, right on. That sounds really interesting. I think it might be on my Steam list or like wish list. Maybe we had this conversation before, but I've heard the name. That's a good one. My pick for this, I have two, and that's my show. So damn it, I'm going to say two because I can't pick between the two. First one is Papers, Please. On paper, that sounds like a terrible game. if you're unaware, it's about, basically, it's a game that's all like Atari graphics, and you play as a passport checker in a war-torn Eastern Bloc country. Oh, God.
I saw you play this on your on your thing. Yeah.
I might have played it. Yeah, I might play it on stream.
You did play it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And essentially, it's, as it says in the title, it's a dystopian document thriller.
Yeah.
And as you progress through the days, your goal is to get a passport. Mm-hmm. Or paperwork, and you have to decide whether or not this person's forged their paperwork or not.
It looked really cool when you did it.
Irregularities in it, right? And the idea is that you get two failures, like two mistakes. Mm-hmm. And then at the third one, you start losing money from your pay, from your daily pay. And you only have a certain amount of time. So you have to learn how to do it fast, because the more you make, you can then parlay that money into, like, I don't know, making sure your kid has medication. Because you then go back to at the end of every day, it says who in your family, including your like aunt and your grandparents, who's sick, who's cold, who's hungry, and you have to decide who to feed based on how much money you have, you see. And inevitably people die because it's just depressing and sad. And I remember playing it, and every day the rules change. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, today we have to have a work permit if you're going to be here from this country, and you have to match up the work permit number with this number. And I felt like I was at work. At a certain point, I'm organized. All my papers are organized. I'm pulling papers in. I'm looking at it, checking this, checking that. And then I realize, oh my God, I am stuck in a world of drudgery and sadness, like a real dystopian scenario. Like, it really makes you feel like it's a very interesting game. And if you make mistakes, it has effects in the world. It's really cool. And even people will sometimes come to you with sob stories. Like the earliest one, this is not quite a spoiler, but the earliest one, someone comes through and their paperwork's perfect. Like, oh, my husband's next. We can't wait to start our new life in this country. Your husband comes across and the paperwork's bad. Like, the IDs don't match, or the name doesn't match. Now you have to decide, do I kick this guy out of the office and separate him from his beloved? Or do I sneak him through and sacrifice potentially, you know, my kid starving
to death? That's great.
It is so fascinating and good. And secondly, is a game, if you follow my streams, you know this game, Hollow Knight. I did not think I was going to like Hollow Knight. I'm like, I like Metroidvanias. I like that style of game, but I don't like getting my ass beat by games. I don't like super hard games. I don't. But you know what? People love it.
Yeah.
And it might be a top, I don't say top 10, but definitely a top 15 game ever for me. I freaking adore Hollow Knight.
Wow, interesting.
Oh, I adore that game. And it kicks my butt on numerous occasions, but it always feels fair. Like, it always feels fair when I lose. For the most part, some of the bosses are really not fair. Like, you suck. You just suck, sir. Or man, whatever creature you are. It's scary and creepy and terrifying sometimes and surprising at every turn. It's fantastic. So
that's great.
Hollow Knight's my pick.
Funny with that show me your papers game. That then now I want to add another rock to my Mount Rushmore, but not a system, a game. I feel like Oregon Trail set the stage for games like
this. We should do the Mount Rushmore games.
Because Oregon Trail is, I've always called, a hardship simulator.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you ever want to know how hard it is to traverse the West and not lose your entire family, that game nailed it. And
it really did.
It's such a simple game, such a simple concept, but it really was educational too.
Big time. It was big time educational. That was, I mean, that started in the 70s, I want to say. Yeah. Bill, I don't know if you remember Mrs. Clark, actually, a couple times she would allow us to play that in her office. Yeah, that's a great, great game.
Fourth grade. Mrs. Clark.
I don't know if this will make the cut, but we had the Oregon Trail Deluxe for like the Apple II. I think it was an actual CD-ROM version of it.
Ooh.
And for whatever reason, I got a hold of it in the computer lab in grade school, and I was playing it. And the part where you hunt animals, it's way more advanced than the original. You actually have a crosshair and you go around like shooting buffalo and stuff. And all of a sudden my teacher looks over and goes, "What are you playing?" I'm like, "Oh, it's the game on it's Oregon Trail." And I'm like shooting rabbits. She's like, "You can't play that." She was so confused. She took it away from me. Like, it's your game. You guys had it. I didn't bring this. Bring this from home.
Shooting rabbits.
It is like kind of violent, but hey, that's, you know, accurate.
Over the course of this podcast, there have been a number of shows that have been supportive or helpful, provided feedback, or even appeared on an episode in the past. And I just wanted to send a quick thank you to those shows for just being awesome and being part of the community. As podcasters, we're in it together. So a very big thank you to the following shows in alphabetical order: Baseball and Whatever, Commodore Chronicles, Gamers Week, love you guys, thank you so much for all your support, Games My Mom Found, Mike, I probably wouldn't be doing this right now if it weren't for your show, so thank you, I Drink Your Podcast, Level Zero, Magecast, Moses, my brother, I love you, man, I love the work we do together, so thank you, thank you, thank you. Nerds Without Pants, New Dad Gaming, Player One Podcast. A big show like that should not be helping a little show like me, but it's amazing. Greg and CJ and the whole crew there are just awesome. Thank you so much. Playlist Wars, Retro Gaming Bygones, Retro Groove Podcast, and finally, Retro Logic. Thank you so much. And to those I forgot, I'm a dummy. And thank you again for all the help and support. Awesome. So next up is on Twitter, TeacherBloke85. Ian, he's been on our show a few times early on. Really good guy, friend of the show since very early on. He asks, real simple one, what's your favorite ending to a video game?
Favorite ending.
Ooh, these aren't simple. That's.
I know. That's well, like tough. I said, I can always cut out the parts where we hem and haw. We can sound like we just have instantaneous answers. Just like, boom.
These guys are quick.
These guys are real quick on their feet.
It's
rather
true,
quick-witted.
Bill. You're right about that. We can think here.
Yeah, you can think. I can. Since silence is a scary thing for me, I always again default to Final Fantasy VI. As one of my favorites. There's probably better out there, but just this how satisfying of an ending. I like the fact there's just one. I know Chrono Trigger has like 10 or 11, and that's cool. But some of those Chrono Trigger endings are just kind of throwaway joke endings. Fine, right? But Final Fantasy VI compiled a wonderful send-off to the series. Yeah. Everybody, the series, to the game, every character gets a little bit of ending time, right? Has something sewn up, you know? Gets a little character beat to kind of finalize the final battle. The final battle, of course, is great. It's long, it's drawn out, it's extremely satisfying. It's after this giant, giant meal of a game, it's a really good aperitif. Like, it's just like a really nice cognac at the end of your very heavy meal. So Final Fantasy VI is always the answer for me.
And Chrono Trigger is a really good ending too.
That's true.
Yeah, back to that question.
No. The standard ending of Chrono Trigger is fantastic. And again, I don't want to get into that debate because it's hard to defend either one and say which one's better. But
I guess I'll go with Link to the Past for me.
Great.
Bill talks about satisfying. And I mean, every ending of a game should be that, but You have, it's more so when the game is, you know, challenging. That's, you know, not that it was the hardest game in the world, but when I played it, yeah, it was difficult. So that you really, the responsibility really lies on the makers of the game to make it satisfying. And that was deeply satisfying for me. It was long. It was emotional. You see, you know, all the characters that were touched, the brothers making the sword, the lost boy who's now a boy. That's a tough scene when he transforms into the tray and he's playing the flute, the priest in the sanctuary, all of it. It's very like emotional. It's like, wow, I really, you know, I saved the day here. So yeah, I'll go with that one.
Nice. What about you, Bobby?
I have two off the top of my head. Again, like you bring up Silent Hill. Silent Hill 2 is one of my favorite games of all time on PlayStation 2, but PlayStation 2 didn't make my Mount Rushmore. Go figure that out.
That's true.
but there are great games on that system for sure. Silent Hill 2 is one of my favorites, just all around story and experience. But Silent 2 has multiple endings. And my favorite, my favorite ending is the most depressing one because it's very, it just hits you without any words or dialogue. It's very, it's perfection. We've made two Silent Hill movies and they've not even gotten close to this. And again, no. I go, just copy it. Just copy the game. Don't even try. I don't know why they don't just make the, a movie of Silent Hill 2, but I don't know. I don't know if I want to explain it at all, but, because I don't want to give spoilers, but it's also been out for 20 years. But the concept of the game is that you get a letter from your wife to meet her in Silent Hill. She's waiting for you in Silent Hill. The only problem is that she died several years ago. So you have to go. You're going to Silent Hill on a mysterious letter from your lost wife. And as you go through the city of Silent Hill, you see creatures that represent the guilt of being a widow and all these sort of metaphorical things. It's brilliant. Really, really
wow, that is brilliant.
Artistically brilliant game. At the end, after a lot of things happen at the end, but and you sort of face your own guilt. You reconvene with the woman character you meet. You don't leave Silent Hill. I forget exactly why, but you meet with the who's basically like maybe your new love interest. They don't really say it, but they might be the new love interest. And as you walk off on the pier, she starts to cough. And it's just hits you right in the gut, like, oh, he's stuck here, reliving the same awful
moments.
He's
gonna relive.
It is the most depressing ending, but it's perfect. It's so damn well done, and no dialogue. It's just if you blink, you miss it, but it's perfect.
Oh, that's cool.
My second would be Super Metroid. Very simple, but I consider the whole. You actually play the ending. And that's the weird part about it. You have to escape the planet, but like the ending starts once you start going after Mother Brain with the rainbow gun, and then you have to escape the planet. And I feel like that's all part of the ending. So you're actually playing with it. You're playing the cinematic in 24 bits.
The ending starts where you're leading down to the boss. I mean, even when like the sand enemies are. That's the ending to me. Then that's where it starts. That's a great point. You play the ending.
Yeah. I can remember it to this day, and I haven't played it in years, but it's just, I would just like want to play the game over and over again just to get to the end. It was really great.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I think I definitely agree with that. I think the ending of that game would be once you defeat the first part of Mother Brain, because after that, there is no fail state. Like, you can't lose. After you beat the, you know, just head brain, you know, not full monster brain. Once full monster brain appears, because you can fail that, but once you get to a certain point, you've now won. Because once she starts doing the rainbow blast.
Well, you have to leave the planet, though. I'm sorry to interrupt. You could lose if you don't leave the planet in time, to Bobby's point.
True.
That's a part of the... You have 3 minutes to get the H out of there.
but I'll be honest with you, and I guess maybe it's just me having maybe revisionist eyes. I think you really have to try hard.
It's true. To
not win that. Like, you got to try. You got to try your best to fail at that. Although I have seen people on Twitch do so, maybe it's not as simple as that. But I think regardless, I think that whole ending piece... is really awesome. Set up for you to succeed, and it's one of the best. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the best final hours in games.
Oh yeah,
that's no question whatsoever. Cool picks, all y'all. let's see here. Let's hear to a video game. Okay. All right, so now let's go to a couple of questions that are more parent focused. So Bobby, you are without kids, but you can pretend if you want. I don't know. You can give bad advice, like just throw them in the pool. Oh, I'm sure I'll swim. Don't children float?
Put some whiskey on the pacifier, right? That shuts them up.
That's
right.
Brandy.
That's how they did it back in the 1900s. Yeah. Why do we all turn to Edwin G. Robinson?
Yeah, see? Yeah. Saying now, Flanders.
Oh man, all right, so at @info_sprinkles any tips or tricks for older gamers with young children or just having kiddos? Parents who integrate their children heavy into the pastime can be very quiet about what or how they do for obvious reasons on social media. It's neat to hear stories about all the gaming integration. So I think the heart of that question is any tips or tricks on how we've allowed our kids to interact with the medium. He's probably saying if you say it on social media, people still consider video games to be the space of nerds or the devil or both. And for some reason, don't consider it to be on the same level as, I don't know, TV or movies. Because as I've said to Joey on this show a number of times, I'd much rather my son play a video game for 2 hours than stare at that stupid TV for 2 hours.
Sure.
My son at his grandma's house watched the Paw Patrol's movie, which is just an hour and a half of people yelling at you and new products to purchase. That's really all that movie is. It's just people screaming at all times with bright colors. I'd much rather him play Mario Kart for an hour and a half, really, I legitimately would, than and consume that valueless candy. Right. So to InfoSprinkle's point, it's not something you see much on social media. So I think it's be a good opportunity. One thing, InfoSprinkles and anybody else listening, if you wanted to check out a podcast that talks about this a lot and have for almost 300 episodes worth, New Dad Gaming is a weekly show, half an hour, two guys who talk about their lives playing games with their kids, gaming as dads, how to balance those things. It's an awesome show. They're really good guys. They've been on my show a bunch of times and will continue to do so. So definitely check out New Dad Gaming if you want a real master course on that topic. But Joey, obviously you have children who are Fortnite age. Is he 13 now? 13?
He's 14 next month. Yeah.
Oof, man. 14 and 12, I guess then,
yeah,
right?
Got it.
14 and 12. So your sons obviously play games. They've been playing games for a while. How do you not only balance your gaming time without feeling like, and this is actually a second question that's coming up, so we'll just stick with kind of those tips and tricks. Like, how do you do that?
Well, I think, I mean, to get back to Sprinkles, I think we broke those paradigms, those plates, both of them, that gaming is for geeks and nerds, as well as it's defined as the devil's playground. I know when we were children, that was very prevalent. You know, if you played video games, you were this asthmatic, you know, dork. And also it was, you know, under attack constantly from parents. But I think now with the advent of gaming on mobile devices, I think that broke both paradigms. My personal opinion. 'Cause you could just play now anytime you want. Just like you're watching a video anytime you want, or you're listening to music anytime you want. You can play a video game on a bus. You can play it on a train. Adults play it. Plus, parents now are played as children. So we've moved past where the baby boomer was, you know, the main mold of the parent in society. Now you have Gen X parents. So how do you bridge that to children? Interact with them. That's my suggestion. Yeah. Just play video games with them. You know, we never had that, you and I, you know that, because gaming was, you know, it was new at the time. So it was, you know, your parents didn't know what the hell, you know, a video game was, at least not in my situation. If I wanted to play, I played with my sibling. But now, yeah, that's my suggestion. You know, introduce them the games, bring them to the classics, Sonic, Mario, and vice versa. You know, keep an open ear. You know, give a new game a try. You know, you may think, this is lame, but try it. You know, if your son or daughter says, you know, Dad, let's play Minecraft, give Minecraft a try. Give Roadblocks a try. Five Nights at Freddy's. There's so many new games that my children have introduced me to. I could have been very rigid. You know, I could have said, no, sure, I'm not playing your stuff. You're playing my stuff. But that's how you interact. You share it. It should be a sharing experience.
Yeah, and now you have like this. You have a crazy username in Fortnite, right? You're like Edly Joe E dash QQ whatever.
Sure.
And you're wrecking on noobs, as the children say. I think I agree with that. You know, honestly, I think it's integrating your children is. I do think, however, as amazing as games are, I think games can be I would say addictive. I think games can be addictive. I think nearly anything can be addictive to a certain extent. I'm not going to get into that conversation when it comes to, like, you know, addiction and such. But games are amazing. And to a child, it's like crack. Like, it's straight up pixie sticks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, again, it is so interactive. It is so enthralling. What I did, I told my kid he can't play it. That was it for you. Sorry, Will. So I'll tell the quick story. My son loves Mario Kart. If he wants to play a game, it's a racing thing. He likes racing games. If we go to the arcade, he goes right to the cars, to the motorcycles. Can't quite do it yet, so I hold the motorcycle and I move it for him. But he loves racing. That's his thing. But his problem was that he would get really upset when he lost. And lost meaning fourth place, you know. Not like 12th.
That's not losing. Really, I'm sorry to interrupt. That's not bad.
Of course it's not. No, of course it's not. And he's finally playing without all the easy stuff on, and he's still getting to like fourth or fifth place. And again, this was back when he was, he's five, right? And so he got to a point where he's getting really frustrated, and all he wanted to do was play games. Like, that was it. And if I say, all right, Will, you know, your hour is up, you know, it's time to go take a bath, take a shower, whatever, he'd get really upset, throw a fit, because he was so enthralled in the game. So I told him, I'm like, this is maybe a few months ago, after an episode, I'm like, but Will, that's it. I'm not going to let you play games anymore. He said, it was for how long? I'm like, I don't know. I'll let you know. And my thinking was like, this wasn't though good. And this was not a good thing, as I kind of learned through this experiment. I'm going to give him the games back for his birthday. But we've since then, like, really controlled the time. Like, time, when you can watch TV, when you can watch a show, how long you can watch it. Because I think that's part of it, is really setting those boundaries. Because kids want boundaries, as far as I know. The kids want them, but they don't want them. But they really do want them.
Yep.
And they don't want to just run rampant. So as much as they kick and scream, they want those boundaries, because it makes them feel safe. It makes them feel loved. You know, that whole thing. So my issue, my mistake in that was, he's not learning now how to deal with the emotions of losing or getting the game taken away, which is why I'm going to give it back to him. That way he can hopefully learn. My thing was, maybe you just need to be a little more mature. Maybe you just need to be a little more grown up, because it looks like you can't handle this, just based on his reactions to it.
Right.
But so this is more of info sprinkles, a thing don't do, actually. I wish I hadn't. I wish I had worked a little harder and really gotten to the root of why you feel this way. Like, where is the emotion coming from? Let's work on the emotion. Not forget it. Don't have the emotion anymore. So I don't love my answer to that question today. My answer to the problem I was faced with. So yeah, my very quick answer again to a very long answer to a very quick question is, like Joey said, play with them, you know, and definitely play with them, understand what they like, you know, don't be upset if they're not. My son still can't get past, I lie, he got past the first world of Mario on the Switch, whatever the Mario Switch is, right? He got past the first world, but he's still like trying to figure it out. Racing game, loves it. Put a racing game in his hand, he's a very happy kid. So play racing games, that's fine. And play with them. I think that's really good. I think that's really smart. Don't look down on Roblox, because all the kids that play Roblox, well, they do.
Everyone,
Roblox.
Everyone,
it's insane.
Are they still playing Minecraft also?
It's the biggest game in the world, Bob Tanchu.
Still,
it's still.
Oh yeah.
He is not. My son has not had Minecraft yet, but he has a neighbor friend who plays Minecraft, and he's asked about it. I'm like, you know, I think you might, because he loves Legos.
Yeah.
And it's just video game Legos, Joey. If I'm wrong, tell me. But especially you play it like in a free play kind of scenario where things aren't destroying it. Just build stuff. I'm all about creation software. We talked about it a bit, Bobby, when we talked about Mario Paint. That was a formative game for both of us. Yeah. So anything that's creation is I'm cool with. The second question comes from Mark Wilson, a friend on Facebook. How do you juggle your time and responsibilities as a husband and father with your love of gaming without feeling selfish? Asked as a 46-year-old gamer, dad, and he shouts out Xbox Life, Forza Horizon 5, Call of Duty Vanguard, and Oddworld. So he's letting y'all know what he is rocking. So, yeah, how do we play games as grown-ass men and have kids and have a job and have a wife and take kids to swim practice, right? How do we balance that out? So, Joey, I think you kind of hit on it a little bit where you just you can play anywhere and you find your moments.
That's it. For me, oftentimes, I'm, you know, the house falls asleep at 11:30, and that's my time. If I want to read a book, if I want to listen to the new Soundgarden album, if I want to play a video game that I haven't played, if I want to watch a movie that I haven't seen, that's my time. How I interact gaming during the day is I try to interact. You can make it a family thing. It's no different than doing anything else with your children, watching a movie, playing a game of chess, you know, hey, let's turn on the arcade one up and play Mortal Kombat. Let's play Street Fighter. Let's play Fortnite. And you're killing three birds with one stone. You know, they're talking and interacting with their friends because now everything's online based and you could play with friends of their age. You're interacting with your children and you're still getting your gaming fix, so to speak. But like everything, and Bill touched on this, in moderation, because you can get obsessed with it and 1 hour can turn to two very quickly.
And I also think with the concept of feeling selfish, I think we have to be okay, and everyone should be okay with this, you know, anybody, kids, no kids, et cetera. You know, as we get older, we have more responsibilities. But I will always hold fast to the notion that adults should be playing more. And I know that adults should be playing more because our responsibilities in life can feel overwhelming. I think that relaxation, that unwinding is a good thing. And I think if you're doing it in moderation, as long as nothing else is slipping, right? Like your bills are being paid, you're going to work, right? You're paying attention to your partner, you got your kids are all in good shape. As long as everything is in balance, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, you know, I want to just, you know, zone out and play some games for an hour, you know, or I'm going to take an hour on a Sunday and just play some games. And I do think having kids, like, again, to Joey's point, that allows you to not only get that time to play games, but interact and be with your children and form those bonds and those memories, right? So it's understanding that self-care is important. And, you know, and if games are part of that self-care for you, then awesome. Some people, it's playing on a softball team, right? Other people, it's golfing for 4 hours a week, right? Other people, it's reading books, you know? And if it's for you, it's for games, then carve the time out to make time for yourself.
Bowling,
and
hunting,
enjoy
fishing, whatever, to Bill's point.
Yeah, right? You know, everybody has their thing that they do to unwind and de-stress and just enjoy. So don't feel like – and again, I think because games, I think, still have this – stigma in a lot of people's minds of being this niche kind of waste of time. Honestly, I think sometimes I get that. I could tell somebody, I've mentioned this to you, Joey, on the show. I can tell somebody that I binged, you know, season 3 of Stranger Things to prep for the new season. Oh, this weekend, my wife and I, we blew through Stranger Things season 3. We're getting ready for season 4. And no one would think nothing of it. No one would think anything of it. They'd be like, oh, sure. Okay. Wow. Yeah. It was a great season. How'd you like it? If I told somebody I played Fallout New Vegas for 6 hours, like, wow, it was a rainy day. Kids were at grandma, grandpa's, and I just binged out on Fallout New Vegas. There would be the connotation of, ooh, he's a bit of a nerd. Huh. I think from a lot of people.
You know
right?
what, Bill? I don't mean to cut you off, but
yeah, go ahead.
You That's a good point. I just 10 minutes ago brought up how we've gone past that stigma and we've broken that paradigm. That's a good point, though, Bill. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I think because the barrier of entry for games is also a little higher, because anybody can sit down and watch Stranger Things, but you have to have some gaming ability. You have to have played it at some point, to experience that. And if I said there I blew through 6 hours of Candy Crush or a mobile game, then people would like, well, wow, you literally just wasted your time playing this mindless game. Well, you just wasted your time watching, I don't know, whatever random show you were watching. I mean, that was a waste of time for you. So I think there is that stigma, and I think that might be where a lot of this question comes from, is I'm playing games. This is a selfish thing because somewhere deep inside, a voice is telling me this is a waste of time. And trust me, it is not. Mm-hmm. It is something you're enjoying, and it's a good thing you're enjoying. Don't let people steal your joy. I say that all the time when I'm doing reviews and such and complaining about BioShock Infinite to my friends and friends on podcasts and such. I always say, don't let me steal your joy. If you like this thing, continue liking it, regardless of what this old man says, right, in a cranky microphone. So, well, warm. All right, Bobby, you're back in. Let's go. all right. So speaking of people I talk to very often about video games, Mike Alberton of Games My Mom Found has three questions for us. Three, count them, three.
Let's do it.
Mike Alberton, as I always say, I'll credit with getting me back into podcasting after he kindly let me guest on a few episodes of his podcast. The first one was Friday the 13th on the NES, which is actually not a bad game. No. I'm going to stand by that. Yeah. It's actually pretty good. And the second one being Fear Effect for the PS1. Hmm. Oh boy, that is not a good game. But and then I did the entire MCU with him. We kind of, if you want to hear me talk about every single episode, every single movie in the MCU up to Phase 4, which we're now in Phase 4, then check out Games My Mom Found. We're all of them. So Mike Alberton asks, why is BioShock Infinite your favorite game of all time? Mike, you're a mean-spirited person. I don't understand why you would do that. That's what we call a troll question in our world. If you want to hear my opinions on BioShock Infinite, the games my mom found, I don't know what episode it is, but it's relatively recent. There is a 3-hour episode. That is my doc. Wow. That is my official thesis. That's my thesis. That is my dissertation.
Yeah.
On listen to that. I will no longer entertain questions on BioShock Infinite. I will just refer you to the dissertation that I did on his show. So, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Have you guys played BioShock Infinite?
Yes, and I beat it. Yeah,
I played BioShock the first one.
You played the good one.
Yeah,
Bobby, what did you think of BioShock Infinite? And I will just
for my reference, though, I'd love to hear. I've heard about this rant, but I've never heard it. what episode is it, though? Because I couldn't find it.
All right. I'll let you go ahead and share your opinions of BioShock Infinite. I will look up
the number.
The number, yes.
I liked BioShock Infinite quite a bit. I felt it did a lot of things unique and interesting, but ultimately, there were also things that I felt were, you know, not as interesting as well. Case in point, like, I think the new city in the clouds and how they handled all that was, like, really great. But for whatever reason, the City of Rapture is still way more interesting than whatever this city is. I forgot the name of it already.
Columbia.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
I liked the for whatever reason, though, the gameplay in Infinite I found a little easier, and I didn't die a whole lot. I found myself kind of just blowing through it and not really having to start over, and I've got a little bored at times because I just kept like just winning. I didn't think the challenge was enough, actually. Where in BioShock, the first BioShock, if you don't get like the pattern down of my memory stinks. the shots you put in your arm.
Oh, the plasmids.
If you don't get the rhythm of plasmids and melee weapons, like, you're gonna die quite a bit in BioShock 1. And once you nail it, then it's smooth sailing. But Infinite, I just found myself constantly finding ammo and just blowing away all my problems.
It's very easy.
And
it's
very easy. Yeah,
it's a really easy game. Yeah,
I think
not
they sort of sacrifice like fast action gameplay for actually like challenging you. And I felt that was a detriment. I also found the infinite part of BioShock Infinite not to ruin too much for people who haven't played it, but I don't think the infinite part of BioShock Infinite is as clever as Ken Levine thinks it is. From a story perspective, I think when you make everything about nothing, then why do I care? And that's kind of the ending of the whole series. The infinite timelines thing, while clever, just diminishes all the good story building you did on Columbia. Because I like the stuff they build. I like the... there's just a lot about the story that I did like, but once you make it about nothing, you're like, oh, well then, why do I care and why am I playing this? And on top of that, it's also easier game. So that I think that's what makes it a kind of a trying game.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, too, the enemies in Infinite, you know, mowing down loads of people... it's not nearly as interesting as like defending yourself from the characters in BioShock 1. The splicers, they're more tragic and they're way more interesting.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And yes. So you're defending yourself from people who are victims of their own selfishness, basically, and self-interest. And that's awesome. In Infinite, it's just regular looking people. And it's not nearly as interesting.
It's the problem. So I have a lot. There are things in Infinite I like. To your gameplay point with being easy, they took what was a beautiful immersive sim.
Yeah.
In that immersive sim being learning about a world through the little mini short stories of people in it, through just experiencing the environment. And, you know, the example I quote is you walk into a bedroom and there's a corpse on the bed surrounded by a bucket of pills. Right. And that's like a little cool short story that's immersive, that's bringing me into this world. I feel invested in it.
Yeah.
It turned that into Halo. As I called it on the show, murder hallway after murder hallway.
And you go
from murder hallway to murder hallway, and you murder thousands of people. And I don't like their race. I think they're very sloppy and ham-handed with they handle racism. Episode 311, by the way, like the band. 311. Now you won't forget it. On Games My Mom Found, episode 311 to hear me and two other people talk about BioShock. It's that's the main one of the big problems with that story is that it does seem cool on the surface, but when you dig an inch deep, it falls apart. And it's just, again, we all got surprised by the lighthouses. It's a very effective ending. Like the ending's effective. Like emotionally effective, but it's paper thin and it's annoying because it's BioShock. You're supposed to be better than that. Damn it. Damn it, Ken Levine. So anyway, that is I will not continue on this. I could do this. I can't. I actually right now, like either tonight or tomorrow, have to start the DLC for recording on Saturday. So I got to get cracking on a DLC, which is the biggest retcon in one of gaming history.
But yeah, I've played those as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're actually pretty good. I don't mind.
Bad.
They're fine. But yeah.
It's funny to your point, though. The game does kind of work when you play the arcade mode, where you just play the battle rounds and try to load up stuff. Like that's kind of that kind of gameplay works in that environment. Okay, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. It's if you like the combat. Again, I didn't even love the combat. I think the weapons are okay, but none of them are really great. I actually think, and this is my last point on this, so people don't have to know, you should listen to it because I have way more than this. Elizabeth is a great escort character because she gets out of your way. You never have to worry about her. And she's helpful. She's always throwing you things. Like, here's some more salts. Here's some more weapons, right? And we're like, ooh, thank you, game, for making my life easier.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that is that removes the need to ever scrounge around for ammo or scrounge around for money.
No, I have everything I need all the time.
I have everything I need because Elizabeth just keep throwing me RPG ammo.
Yeah.
I had an RPG because I didn't like fighting the dumb Patriots because they suck. So I just hit him three times with the RPG and I was done. Can move on.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth starts throwing me more RPG ammo.
Yeah.
Now this is supposed to be like the special weapon. Like this is like my get out of jail free card item. I shouldn't just be getting handed more rockets.
Here,
yeah, rockets. Yeah, yeah. That it just completely removes the need for any sort of, again, scrounging or playing with your build. Like, oh, you know, I can only have two weapons, so let me drop this down for a hint. No, you find the two that you like. I like carbide and rocket launcher. Yeah. Boom. That was the rest of the game.
I'm sitting here thinking about like the first Resident Evil, and at the very end of the game, someone throws you a rocket launcher. If you miss, you have to like start over because the game, because you don't get to beat the game.
You're right.
And now I'm thinking about, now we're in Bioshock Infinite, and Elizabeth just pooping out rockets from thin air.
You're never wanting. So
yeah.
Anyway, episode 311, like the band of games my mom found for that. The second question from Mike Alberton, if you could revive one dead gaming franchise, what would it be? And let's say dead as in there hasn't been a new game in 10 years.
I'll go Shinobi. That's for me.
I dig that, man. Shinobi, yeah. I like that.
It was a great one for Master System, Game Gear, and Genesis. Yeah, that was, talk about dead and buried. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a new Shinobi series. I'd love it.
What about you, Bobby?
Boy and his blob. No, I'm kidding. There's only been one. No one remembers it. Marble Madness. Okay, wait a minute. All right. Let's get serious.
Yes, there we go.
Well, I guess Silent Hill again, because it did die. The trailer never got past the trailer. And then Norman Reedus, who was also going to be in that Silent Hill game, went on to do Death Stranding. So,
yeah.
That's what pretty much Kojima ended up working on. What's a dead franchise? Because nothing ever really dies.
Yeah, I mean, well, my first thought was Star Fox, but they did come out with Star Fox Zero in 2016 on the on Joey's beloved Wii U. Yeah. So I saw someone streaming that actually. It looked kind of fun, actually.
It was
a pretty neat concept.
It's a really good game. Graphically, it's a really good game. And I mean, it's the same, you know, fly through the skies, shoot 'em type dynamic that all the Star Fox games came with. So, but no, I think it's one of the better installments of the franchise.
Bobby, I'm going to just say it since you haven't, and I'm surprised you haven't yet. Half-Life.
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of things we'll never, ever get.
Half-Life 3 will never happen.
I would like Half-Life Alyx, I guess, maybe. I guess, does that count?
That was the VR one, right?
Yeah. Maybe that doesn't count.
And Hunt Down the Freeman was the fan-made game that has voiced by YouTubers, and it's really bad.
You mean YouTubers aren't voice actors?
No,
come on now, stop it.
No.
Don't ruin my dream.
Keemstar has a role. He plays the president.
Oh no.
He's on a radio, but it's bad. It's really bad.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, Half-Life 3. A collective aneurysm would happen if they actually announced Valve released it as a Half-Life 3. Or a Team Fortress, for that matter. I think there's a lot of fans of that game, too.
For sure.
I mean, but as far as other franchises, there's always a new Mario. There's always a new Resident Evil or a re-release.
It's true. It's hard. Donkey Kong, Kirby, they're all
the Nintendos. Yeah, they always
never stop.
Yeah.
You don't want a Turok? You don't need another Turok game in your in your life?
I mean, hey, I don't know if Joey knows. I love Turok too.
So did I.
That was one of my favorite games growing up.
Turok Dinosaur Hunter, the best.
Yeah,
that's it.
And I Turok 3 I like too. You can always bring that back. It might be tough in today's climate to have a Native American dinosaur hunter, or it might be celebrated. I'm not really sure at this point, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, man. All right, cool, man. Cool. It's good, and good. Let us move right along. I didn't expect us to go as long as we are. My goodness, we're an hour and a half in already.
Two-parter? No.
What's that?
Is it a two-parter?
No. This is just going to be a long-ass episode that people can listen to or not. That's going to be the answer to that question. And And here I am saying the exact opposite. This could not be a 2.5 hour episode. There was no way. There's no way I could do that to you. And if you made it this far, you're a true fan and friend of the show. So thank you for doing so. I hope you've been enjoying the conversation so far. I certainly had a great time answering those questions and just chatting with my best friend and my brother. You know, honestly, what could be better than that? So thank you so much for joining me on this. Next week, part two, it's under an hour. Boom, knock that out. And then after that, we continue with the N64, the GoldenEye episode, and then after that, an episode that captures a bunch of games, like a omnibus, I think they call it, of all sorts of games for the N64. It's a lot of fun, some great memories there. And then we look forward to The Legend of Zelda, after a few episodes in between, because that's how this kind of works. But until then, thank you so much for checking out the show, and continue being awesome.